Okay, thanks so much for joining us on the part two of the mailbag episodes of The Spirit World. I'm Debbie Giorgiani with Adam Bly. And you know, we went to break, Adam, but what did you feel? I mean, how did you feel about me saying I reject that? I mean, I just don't like it. And I actually have taught, I've had, that's come up a lot in questions when I have given talks on holy angels. And that's one of the first things they bring up is they say, is it true? And I say, no. Because I've never seen anything, I've never found anything, and I'm not going to believe what the demons say in an exorcism. I mean, I'm just not. Am I wrong in thinking that way, or like, what do we do? Because it's a lot. It's out there a lot on social media.
Well, I mean, the church instructs us to not believe what they say, and even if they do give an answer to one of the allowed questions, which is, "What's your name? How did you enter? When are you leaving?" Mm-hmm. Even then, it's not always true. Sometimes it takes repeated questions, extended prayer before they give what seems to be a truthful answer. Anything outside of that, which is to help that person, is you can't trust it at all, because they're volunteering the information. And they are cunning creatures. They're going to volunteer things that are going to create fear in the listener's mind, or if they're going to pass that on into other people's minds. And they want to cause doubt in God. You know, they want to cause doubt in people in terms of trusting Jesus. Like, I know this sounds silly in a sense, but like, even if that were true, so what? I think is another way to look at it. Like, think of the Cure of Ars, right? The famous stories of like Satan's in his bedroom and his bed's catching on fire, and he wakes up and he says, "Oh, it's you," and he rolls over, the fire goes out, and he goes back to sleep. Like, that's the approach that really we should have, is who cares, right? Mm-hmm. Because anything the devil and the demons do, they need permission from God to do it. They're not running free, doing whatever they want. So if God's allowing them to tempt me a little extra today, so be it. God knows best. That's happening.
Right.
If God's allowing some of them to be around, which we know they are, right? They're around tempting. Who cares?
Sure.
And if there's extras, who cares? There's lots of them. So it's, again, it's this kind of thing where without the theology to understand stuff that comes out of exorcisms, it creates tremendous fear. Like, I have specific big, you know, named demons that we've dealt with many times that have said they're looking for a way to kill me, that they've been assigned to literally kill me. Who cares? Like, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. They certainly hate me. I couldn't care less. Jesus would have to allow them to do anything. So
right.
I leave it up to the Lord. Now, you take that without a theological understanding of angels and demons, and that the fact that God limits them, and people say, "Oh my God, that's terrifying. I'd never get involved in exorcisms."
Right. Right.
But it's just the opposite. Like, we understand that God's in charge, and these creatures want to create fear and hysteria.
Right.
And we don't let it bother us, because we've seen the truth.
Yeah, but you know what concerns me, though, real quickly, and then we'll move on to the next question. I don't care for the idea of putting it out there that there is an assigned one. You know, I know you've seen the old comic, you know, the comic strips where you see a good angel on one shoulder and a bad angel on the other. I get that. But I don't like the idea of spreading that, because, especially for young children that are forming their understanding of the holy angels. I mean, to think that they have this thing attached to them or was assigned to them is not a very good way to live a peaceful, confident spiritual life. So that's why I reject it. And I have come out many times. I mean, I haven't really gotten into a debate with any of the priests that are promoting this idea, but I would love to. You know, maybe they could come on the show and we could talk about it. I mean, who knows? But let's move on from that and be at peace. Like, this is why we have Adam Bly for the spirit world, because I love the way he teaches on this, because this is important. It keeps us calm. It keeps us peaceful, and it keeps us very, you know, rational and, you know, just grounded about this. So we don't get like all twisted up and feel like there's a demon behind every rock and every corner and every closet. So thank you, Adam, for being so calm, cool, and collected about this. Okay, so continuing, Colleen sent this in. Wanted to know if there's something we can do to protect ourselves and our family from the various evils that are out there.
What can we do to protect ourselves? Well, one is learn about the faith and then live it, right? So if you don't know much about your faith, Christian, your Catholic faith, learn about it, because the rules are the rules. God has established the order of the universe. and the rules within the universe. And that's not going to change based on what we think, right? It's not a postmodern universe where my perspective defines reality. It's God's perspective. It's God's rules. So learn those, because those are what govern and regulate what the devil and the demons can do. So that would be number one, learn your faith. Number two, once you learn your faith and understand what being in a state of grace is, that means don't have unconfessed mortal sin on you. Get in a state of grace, stay in a state of grace, and live out the sacramental life. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to worry about this stuff. You know, yes, saints in a very advanced state, like Padre Pio, you know, in a very advanced state, sometimes God allows difficulties for them because they're at a very advanced state and they're confronting the devil unmasked. Then other 99.8% of us living in the world basically live a good life, right, in accord with God's law. And that's what we should be focusing on, pleasing God, moving closer to God, and living in accord with him, as opposed to fearing the demon and saying, what do I have to do to counter this thing that's going to hurt me? Instead, turn towards God and say, what can I do to make you pleased with me?
Right. Beautiful. Okay, so we're getting a lot of questions, and we have for the past several months since the start of the year, about a very, very complex, very complicated, a very difficult subject to tackle in just an answer to various questions. We've got a lot of families that are concerned about you know, sons and daughters in same-sex relationships, you know, they're going on to have relationships and then starting to adopt kids or having trying to have kids by way of surrogates. And we've also heard from many families that they've got a family member that's transitioning and, you know, in the transgender world. And, you know, what can they do about it? Is it linked to the demons? You know, is there something they can do? Can they pray it away? I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, we get a ton of emails on this. And Adam and I have addressed it before, that this is something that really needs to be handled by mental health professionals and other people that are very schooled in this area and trained to really help each individual case, you know, if indeed, you know, something is unfolding and it doesn't seem right. But what would you say, just from a general standpoint, Adam, in the work that you do in the exorcism world, is there a link? Is there a connection? You know, what do you say to these? I mean, these families are looking for answers and kind of sometimes they're looking for very quick answers, and there isn't a quick answer.
Yeah, exactly. It's attractive to try to, like, when we have a problem in life, it's attractive to try to find some external thing and point to that and say, well, it's this external thing is the problem. And if the right expert takes it away, then all my problems will go away. That's attractive. And sometimes it's true. But with most things in life, dealing with human behavior and our psychological, emotional life, it's complicated. And it's not simply always a demon or mostly a demon. We need to, I think, start with the regular human, mundane psychology first, just like right. When we approach demonic problems. We don't say, yes, it's a demon, let's start an exorcism. We have to rule out the mundane first. All right, that's actually a requirement, right? The person's supposed to be evaluated psychologically, psychiatrically, to try to rule out medical problems or psychological problems. We're not supposed to jump to the spiritual hypothesis just because the person says they're possessed. So if we apply that same reasoning to this, the church, I think, would say, well, look at the mundane first. For instance, people that are traumatized in certain ways can end up with sexual problems, right? Or issues related to how they think about sexuality. And I've worked with sex offenders. I've worked with victims of sexual crimes. I've seen all kinds of sexual problems that came out of life experiences. I've had a relative who experienced sexual trauma that caused a change in their life in terms of their sexuality. I've seen this quite a bit. And there are lots of things that can account for gender issues and sexual behavior issues that don't require bringing demons into it at all. And so I would think the vast majority is that. Mm-hmm. Now, could there be a spiritual layer to somebody's problems? Sure. Just like saying, well, so-and-so's an alcoholic. Is it a demon? Could there be a demon involved?
Right.
Yeah, there could be a spiritual layer to that. There's a spiritual layer to everything. It doesn't mean there's demons involved in everything.
Right, okay. Right? So you could apply that to any situation that just seems a little different or off or not as
exactly.
spiritual as... Okay, okay.
Yeah, we don't want to try to simplify this and make it black and white and say, oh, it's 100% demonic and we'll pray it away and then it'll disappear.
Right.
Nothing's
right.
that simple.
Right. Wow, good answer. Great answer, I should say. I think the way Adam presents it, I think is very logical, and we can really grasp it well, and I think that's good. And I continue to send these questions in. We'll happily address them at the next mailbag, which is coming up in a couple months. But if you want to send in some of the stories that are going on in your life with more of the details, and that always can help us shape some of the episodes, just send it to TSW, that stands for The Spirit World, at grnonline.com. We want to thank our wonderful senior producer, Tim, for putting together this mailbag edition two-parter. It was great, and we so appreciate Tim doing that. But you guys got to listen and learn and get all the answers so you don't keep asking the same questions. I mean, we love the same questions, but we want new questions too. So we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders from EWTN's Called to Communion. I want to let you know that I've joined the staff at Stand Tall Life Coaching. If you're struggling to put the Catholic faith into practice because of habitual sin, family or relationship problems, or other personal or theological issues, I'm offering help. Reach out to me at my website, drdavidanders.com, or at standtalltoday.com.
Have you ever noticed that most people think that rules apply to others but not to themselves? They always consider themselves to be the exceptions. What ends up happening, however, is that everybody is exceptional so that the rules don't apply to anybody. The result is something worse than chaos. It's a loss of all the categories of respect and justice. G.K. Chesterton says that when the exception has become the rule, that is the worst of all possible tyrannies. When the cardinal, formerly known as Ratzinger, gave his final homily before the papal conclave, he said, "We are living under the tyranny of relativism." What is relativism? It's when there are no rules, only exceptions. The man who was about to become pope was echoing Chesterton exactly.
Spend more time with the Apostle of Common Sense. Visit Chesterton.org for more information.
The Spirit World continues with Debbie Giorgiani and Adam Bly. We're not taking live phone calls today. Please email your questions to tsw@grnonline.com.
Okay, we are back for part two of the mailbag edition of The Spirit World. Adam and I, we are really just trying to get through all of these concerns, actually, that are coming in from families. Now, Adam, just in a general sense, you know, there are probably, I'm looking at 12, maybe 15 questions or comments coming in about specific things that are happening, like activity that's happening in people's homes that just seems odd, you know. And like you said, Adam, all the time, you got to rule out, like, is there an electrical issue, or, you know, did the cat, you know, knock something out of the wall or something like that? You got to rule that out first, right? And you got to also rule out, like, maybe you're tired, maybe you're hungry and you're just kind of like a little loopy and you're just hearing things. And then after you rule all of that out, you know, at what point do you call a priest and say, hey, I think there's some activity happening?
Well, you know, it's always good to have your home blessed. So, you know, if you think you've ruled out the mundane and your house isn't blessed, don't be shy. Call the parish, ask for an appointment to have a deacon or a priest come and bless the home. That's always good. Now, if you have really extraordinary things going on, like stuff's flying off the walls and, you know, again, you haven't debunked it. Usually there's not a debunk for that, but maybe there could be. But if something dramatic is happening, yeah, call your priest. Let him know.
What do you say to the priest? I'm experiencing some sounds. Like, what do you say in order to get them to believe you?
So it depends on which priest you end up talking to, just like in the rest of the world. Some people are going to be more open to this, the spiritual hypothesis. Some people will be less. But what I would do is be calm and collected and just present the facts and give the details. And the details of when this started, did anything change right before this started, what exactly happened, when did it happen, those kind of things really matter. Did this only happen as you're waking up and you see something or hear something? Has there been a change in your medical status or your medication, or is somebody developing dementia? All kinds of things that could account for this. So context details and the details of what's happening, and talk with your priest about it. If they say, I don't know much about that stuff, I don't like to get involved in it, okay, that's fine. Call the diocese and say, I talk with my priest. He's not really an expert in this. Do you have somebody in the diocese that I could talk to? Somebody who knows more about it. And be reasonable and be patient and be very straightforward.
Beautiful. What if the priest just says, hey, get some holy water, get some blessed salt, do some of these prayers. You should just be okay with that, or should you push back a little?
No, be obedient. And do that as a first step, because even with things that, sound pretty bad, we still like to do a thorough house blessing and check on the person's spiritual life before moving on to considering a house exorcism, even with pretty bad stuff, fairly dramatic stuff. We like to do that as a first step. So if a priest says, take some holy water and some blessed salt, pray in your house, bless your house with the holy water and let me know how it goes. Be obedient to that, because that's pretty close to the first step that we would take in most cases. Now, again, if it's it's hard to explain what I mean by these words. If it's a very serious situation, definitely talk with the priest about that and see if they're willing to connect you with somebody who knows more about it. Now, what I mean by very serious, different people have different yardsticks, and they might say, well, I heard a noise every night this week. It's serious. Fairly dramatic things where people are getting hurt, that people are getting wounded, that kind of thing. At that point, if you can't explain it otherwise, just the blessing may not be enough.
Okay. And just to revisit what we've discussed many times on the spirit world, if you are dabbling in the occult, if you're doing things that are not good, they're breaking of God's commandments, please repent, get to confession. If you are not Catholic, make a very good act of contrition, ask for forgiveness, stop that immediately. And like Adam and I have said, we're like broken records, but it's the way to get to heaven, you guys. Get in a state of grace, stay in a state of grace, and close off those open doors that the demons will come in. You've said it many a times, Adam. I've heard many other priests and exorcists that are working in the field say that, they come in in droves. They just don't squeak through the door. Once they're invited in, they set up camp.
Sure. And it's the same way in possession. It's not like in the movies where it's one demon. It's always a colony. It's a large group. And sometimes they come and go from the case also. So additional ones arrive and things like that. So, yes, it's never just one. It's more about getting the lease on the apartment. Think of it that way, that an organization has a lease on the apartment. And it's the organization that you're dealing with, not an individual.
Okay, so now we're going to move and we'll probably have to carry, we'll start with this couple questions that have come in, and then I put them together in the same topic, and then we'll go through the break and we'll finish up with this, because I think this is of interest to our listeners. Father Amorth, who died in, I believe, 2016 or 17. He was the leading, exorcist in Rome. Okay. And, 2016, he died at the age of 91. I just looked it up. Okay. And, he did apparently, 60, 70,000 exorcisms, things of that nature in the years that he was in the ministry work. Have, a couple questions came in. Have you ever met him?
Yes.
And what was he like?
He was very devout. So when he would speak and teach, I met him at the International Association of Exorcist meetings. So I was with him at conferences a number of times. When he would teach, he was extremely straightforward and spoke very plainly and simply. Mm-hmm. Not unintelligently, but simply. He was able to sum things up and say it very concisely. And he was also very devout. I remember being at Mass with him, being in adoration with him, noticing, you know, he was either praying, answering his phone because he was constantly being called up from all over the world, or he was helping us and talking with us. Mm-hmm. I never saw him not doing something. So he was a powerhouse.
So, and the reason why these questions have come in is, remember the film in, I believe it was 2023, the Pope's Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
And that movie came out, and they were trying to do a, you know, what's fact, what's fiction, you know, because it was based on his ministry work and his life and things of that nature. And they said that a lot of the movie was not real, and it wasn't, it didn't line up with what Father Amorth went through and what he experienced. Did you ever see the movie? That's the question that came in. Did you find that a lot of it was fiction?
Oh yeah. I saw the movie. You know, Hollywood is Hollywood. They're not theologians writing these scripts, right? These mm-hmm. are writers writing these scripts, and then the studios are involved, and they're asking for changes, and a bunch of different people are involved by the time it makes it to the screen. And the goal is to sell tickets. It's not to provide good theology or give accurate portrayals of people. Okay. Yeah, the movie, from the perspective of, is it real? It, completely not. Just mm-hmm. don't look at that for getting educated. Read his books if you want to learn about his life and his approach to things. But the movie had nothing to do with Father Amorth. I mean, I think the only thing that was the same is the fact that the character was a priest and an exorcist. And he was ornery, and sometimes he got in conflict with, you know, superiors within the church. And he was ornery, and he would speak out against things that he saw that were problems in the church. You know, but outside of that, everything else just... I thought it was really in bad taste.
Russell Crowe was the actor in that too. Mm-hmm. That's a shame that he wanted to take part in that. A lot of celebrities seem to be doing that lately, though, that they say one thing in public and then they'll take on roles that are just not, you know, this is, I mean, so you would say that's not beneficial at all for us to learn anything about Father Amor.
No, in fact, you're going to learn a bunch of weird stuff that isn't true or accurate about demons and exorcism. Yeah. Okay. You're not going to learn anything about Father Amorth, and you're going to learn a bunch of misinformation about him and exorcism.
Mm-hmm. I would never even see it anyway, because it's listed as a horror film. Mm-hmm. Okay. So next question that's coming in, we're going to hold it there, and it has to also still do with Father Amorth, because they wanted to know, because the fact that it was 60, I think it's been quoted 60,000 exorcisms he's been a part of, or 70,000 or even to 100,000. So when we come back, we'll address the second part of that question, and then we are going to finish. I think we're going to have some time, Adam. I'm so excited. We'll finish with the basics again, and we've gone over that many, many times, but there's always a refresher that we can use. Plus, as Adam rightly stated before we started the show, that we have brand new listeners every time we do the Spirit World. So we want to get everybody on the same page when we come back.
The St. John Leadership Network presents Glance at the Gospel with Father Nathan Cromley.
The Gospel for the third Sunday of Easter recounts the familiar story of the two disciples who discover Christ on their way to Emmaus. He walks beside them, asks some questions, opens the scriptures for them, and finally reveals himself to them in the breaking of the bread. We read, "Then they said to each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?"
And that single line summarizes the theme of the entire gospel. The disciples are brought repeatedly into an encounter with Christ in faith. In fact, don't we hear Jesus even tell them, "Oh, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets spoke," thus indicating to them that their way to Easter and their way to understanding his resurrection was belief in his word and in his promise. A message that is underscored by the fact that he vanishes after revealing his presence to them under the form of bread. Blessed are those who do not see, but who believe. In a real sense, this is puzzling to all of us. Why would God want us to believe when he could reveal himself to us in plain sight? Wouldn't God making himself visible dispel all room for doubt? Why does God seem to hide sometimes? There are, of course, many answers to this question, but one of the most profound comes from St. Thomas Aquinas. He says that God asks us to live in faith so that we approach him by love. That is to say that God wants something more from us than just knowing that he exists. God wants us to know him like a child knows his father. He wants us to trust him. He wants us to believe, because the one who believes in him will follow him.
For more information, go to www.stjohnleadershipnetwork.org.
A colleague once shared her motto with me: do your best and give Jesus the rest. That wisdom stuck. We all know the frustration of trying to please bosses, clients, friends, or family and still feeling it's not enough. Scripture reminds us that run in such a way that you obtain the prize, or I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. At a woman's event, one mom admitted she felt guilty everywhere she went. At work, she wished she was at home, and at home, she worried about work. I often feel that way, but God calls us to do what must be done, for he is with us. We read that in Samuel. I may not be Wonder Woman, but there's wonder in life itself. We're called to work hard, glorify God, and trust him with the rest. So read scripture. In Proverbs, it says, the diligent hand will rule, but laziness will lead to forced labor. So my coach's question is this: what are you doing every day to communicate your best self? This has been an Epiphany Insight. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
The Spirit World continues with Debbie Giorgiani and Adam Bly. We're not taking live phone calls today. Please email your questions to tsw@grnonline.com.
Okay, we are back for the final segment of the mailbag edition of the Spirit World. No calls today. I know you're saying, well, no calls. We want to ask questions too. Well, you can send your questions in at tsw@grnonline.com, or you can catch us the next time we have a live broadcast, because we always love to open it up to our wonderful family members of the Spirit World, and you can ask your questions about angels, demons, anything in between. Okay, so just know we always like to, we pretty much, Adam and I like to go the whole year live on Saturdays, even through holidays. You know, we're one of these strange programs that like to go live during the holidays. Mm-hmm. Other wonderful hosts decide to take time with family and friends. Not Adam and I. We stay with the Spirit World. So, okay, so that's enough said about that. One more question about Father. He went by Gabriel, right? Father Gabriel Amorth? Mm-hmm. Is that how? Okay, and he's from Italy. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to ask this question. So one of the things that came up, which was very fascinating, because people, obviously, they're very, they're into research, they're into the details. And so the comment came up, he was in exorcism ministry for just so many years. He didn't start right away. He was a priest, and then he was asked to get into this ministry work. Okay. And then when he started, he was full time in the exorcism, work, right? And then, so they were talking about 60,000 exorcisms he was a part of, 70,000, even 100,000. Well, if you do the math, it's like, oh my goodness, he was doing exorcisms like every single day for his whole entire life until he died. So my question is, and then this came up, and this is my question added to this our anonymous person that sent it in from online. If he did do that many exorcisms, and then I looked it up, so tell me if we're right on this, Adam. if he did do that many exorcisms, are they counting just even when he would show up on cases that were ongoing possession cases? Each time he shows up and does the prayers, that's considered an exorcism. Is that correct? Because that's what I found on the research online.
Right. So, you know, he did a lot of exorcisms. It was essentially a full-time office, people waiting in the hall in a line, and he would pray basically like 8 hours a day, right?
Wow.
Case after case after case after case for decades. So it was a lot. Now, if you have a serious case that requires 6 months of weekly prayer or 5 years of weekly prayer, every single time you meet with that person, that's an exorcism.
So it's, just when you meet with them, that's an exorcism.
Meaning like they come in this Friday for prayer, you pray the rite, that's an exorcism. Next Friday they come in for prayer, you pray the rite, that's a different exorcism.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I picked up online. Yeah. I did my own research on that. Okay, so that was accurate. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because really, you're often dealing with different demons every week. The person's dealing with different issues in their own life that week, whether maybe they relapsed on drinking or drugs or fell into sexual sin and a demon got back in that was related to that, et cetera, et cetera. You're kind of dealing with a new situation every week and often different demons. So we wouldn't say it's one exorcism and it's 10 years of work.
Okay, got it. So then let's say, okay, so let's just use let's just say he did 70,000 exorcisms. It's not 70,000 people that were possessed. It could have only been 10,000 people.
Right, right.
Got it.
And also the way, you know, the way I understand that he worked, when people thought they might have a spiritual problem, he would bring them in the office and they would simply pray. They would pray over them from the exorcism, right? That's how they diagnosed it. They would just pray over them and basically see if there's a reaction that looks like a demon. They didn't have time to have every single person go through a long process of going
like
to the doctor and getting the medical reports and coming back in. There was too many people. It was just impractical. Again, he was seeing person after person for 8 hours a day for decades. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. He didn't have the staff to like keep track of everybody and like, oh, did you get your report done? And did you see Dr. So-and-so?
Right.
They would just pray. They just pray. And that's how they diagnosed it. It's a different approach than here in the United States.
Got it. So Father Amorth, so I read another thing when I was researching this, because I thought, let me just go check this out. It was very interesting, the comment and question that came in from one of our Spirit World listeners. But I also just stumbled across this, that he said that the majority of the cases that he worked on, they weren't possession cases.
Of course.
They were mental health issues.
Of course. Yeah.
Wow.
80 to 90% of all the people that contact us and think they have a demonic problem, it's either a misunderstanding, a medical problem, or a psychological problem.
Okay.
Wow. Easily 80 to 90%.
That's amazing. I've learned so much. I mean, and you got to meet him. That's awesome. Okay, so Adam, you're only going to have 5 minutes. You're going to have to go fast. Okay, basics on demonic activity. Go ahead with the different levels. You know, their ordinary activity. Real fast, run through for our brand new listeners, please.
Okay, all right. So first off, demons are spirits. They don't have any physicality. They're out there. God allows it. Don't be scared. It's just part of the reality of the universe. God allows them to do their ordinary activity, which is temptation. They're allowed to tempt us from cradle to grave. Our entire lives, they're around. It's like bacteria. If you don't take the right steps, it can end up harming you. But if you take the right steps and wash your hands and have good hygiene, basically you're going to be okay. And so the spiritual version of that is get in a state of grace. Stay in a state of grace. Okay, so they're around. The ordinary is temptation. We just have to deal with it. God allows it because it makes us spiritually stronger and it leads to wisdom, right? We fall, we get up, we learn a lesson. The extraordinary activity, the church breaks down into basically three levels. You've got infestation of places. So that's when they have the right to do extraordinary things in places, meaning beyond temptation, right? And that is like stuff flying around, black shadows appearing, people being scratched when they're in that location. You know, other manifestations. They're not in a person. They're just floating around doing stuff to scare you. and the church has exorcism of place for situations like that. Then there's oppression, sometimes translated as obsession from obsessio.
And this is the same thing?
Basically, basically. Okay. It's an attack on the on an individual person, right? So again, they're tempting, they're around, all right? But if we enter into relationship with them through the Ouija board, through playing around with witchcraft and Wicca and black magic, other ways, but those are the big ones. We enter into relationship with them. In a sense, they're not just floating around now. They're latched onto us. And wherever we go, they're with us in a, in an extraordinary way beyond the temptation. Now you've got, you know, intrusive, horrible thoughts, repetitive demonic nightmares, waking up with scratches and bruises on your body. Other worse things I'm not going to talk about because it's not good for children to hear.
It's a family friendly show.
but attacks on a person that you could imagine would be bad. Mm. So basically it's a wearing the person down. So the oppression is attacks on the person. Now, it can be attacks on the mind also, which is where you get the obsession side of that translation. Mm-hmm. And that can be obsessions about sin, obsessions about scrupulosity. And I'm not saying every scrupulous person has a demon, but what I'm saying is they can really affect the mind as opposed to the body in some of the cases. But gotcha. The goal is to wear the person down, get them sleep deprived, traumatized enough, PTSD enough, that they will either suicide or give into possession. The demon is constantly saying, kill yourself, kill yourself. It'll be easier. You'll be with us. We won't treat you badly. God's given up on you. Just kill yourself. All those kinds of awful things. In every single case, 100% of the time, they're always saying that to the oppressed person because they want either suicide or give into possession. Mm. When the person is so worn down and so desperate and so tired that they'll do anything to make it stop, that's at the point the demon's pushing for either suicide or give into possession, claiming that we won't beat you up anymore. We won't treat you badly if you let us possess you. And of course, that's a lie. Everything gets 100 times worse. Then you've got possession when the person's given into it completely. And that's where the demon can take over the body and use it as its own for periods of time. It's not all the time. And it's when God allows it. Now, that sounds strange, but he's the God of the universe. Everything is either his permissive will or his active will. He has permissive will about this stuff. Why does he allow it? Two reasons. One, the soul gets that feedback of saying, oh my gosh, this thing isn't my friend. Black magic is bad. I made a mistake. I want to repent and go back to God. That's the number one goal. The second goal is what we see in the Gospels. It becomes a sign to the world of two things. One, there's a spiritual reality. Their very presence in the possessions testify to that, and the world sees it and reacts. Secondly, more importantly, God is God. Jesus is God. And Jesus and his church have authority over these creatures, which becomes a testimony to the people that leads to conversion. That's it.
You did a great job. You did that in under 5 minutes. I would say that was perfect, Adam.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're always dishing out perfect to us, so we might as well give it back to you.
Thank you.
Our senior producer is giggling. We just love doing this. We love the mailbag. We love the open forums. We love the themed shows as well. But, you know, we just love the Spirit World listeners and family members. You guys are great. You're asking great questions. Keep them up, definitely. And so that'll do it. We're done with the two-parter of the mailbag edition. And we're going to give ourselves a round of applause, a pat on the back, because we are almost caught up, Adam, from the questions that have come in since the beginning of the year. So hopefully we'll stay up to speed on this and on track. And so we won't get too far behind like we did last year. It was a good problem to have. But we had a lot of comments and questions come in. But keep them coming. We want to thank our senior producer, Tim, from Guadalupe Radio Network. Thank you so much, Tim, for putting this broadcast together. And we also want to thank EWTN for broadcasting it all over the world. Thank you, EWTN. And that'll do it for Adam Bly. I'm Debbie Giorgiani. Until next Saturday, have a beautiful and blessed week. We'll see you real soon. Mm-hmm.